Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about what farmers should be thankful for this Thanksgiving. In our spotlight, we'll take a look at the new nominee for Secretary of Agriculture. Ag History Minute, we'll talk about the first Thanksgiving dinner. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events. And we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. It's a late deer hunting season, late Thanksgiving year this year, with everything kind of falling at the end of the month. It's hard to believe by the time we get to not even the end of the weekend, it'll be December. So
it kind of came fast, actually.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a weird fall that way of, like, harvest seemed to go really fast, and then we kind of hit November, and I don't know where November went.
It just rained.
We're at the end here. And
it always goes fast, though.
Yeah.
From Halloween to Thanksgiving, though, is some sort of weird time warp. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense. I don't know if it's...
And this year was longer, like, actually, by the calendar, longer.
True.
But it still felt really fast.
It was nice to have an extra week to soil sample.
Right, before deer hunting.
Deer hunting.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. I was wondering why we got contacted from other soil samplers, like, hey, how are you guys doing? You know, we're doing okay. And it's like, no, we're doing okay. Yeah, you had that extra week. You're right.
So did you... Because deer hunting was a week later, did we miss the rut? Like... Did that, Todd and I have no idea because we don't do this, but we talk about this every year, Todd, how we don't care about hunting, but did that help or hurt the hunters, do you think, Matt?
No, I mean, I guess I can only speak to my experience. I haven't seen any harvest numbers, whatever, but there was a lot of shooting opening weekend around us. My dad shot a small doe opening day, and I saw probably half a dozen deer or so. So, I mean, it's not... Doesn't seem that it was any less from my personal experience.
I almost went hunting with my car last night.
Oh, yeah, we could have. When my dad and I were coming home late after he shot his deer, we could have hit four on the road as they were crossing in front of us. So, yeah, no, the deer seemed to be out there.
Three last night didn't get out of the road.
Well, yeah, so they're going to get shot.
I came around the corner, and they're standing there, and I stopped.
Yep.
And, like, two of them kind of like, okay, and then one of them just, like, didn't know which way to go. It was, like, back and forth in the road, and then finally it jumped off, but
yeah,
like, get out of the way.
Guy I went to college with got a pretty good-sized buck, and he had it on, he sent it through Facebook, and then ended up on the news or whatever, because you can send your buck.
So it was that big of a buck? So
yeah, it was a nice-looking buck, yeah. But I haven't seen, like, on the back of cars or in the bed of trucks or whatever. I haven't seen a lot of real big ones this year, so.
I did go by a farm this morning that had some carcasses in a dumpster. So they must have had a good party size of people that got several deer.
Yeah, and so besides my dad, their neighbor, I think, shot. Well, he shot one and he found one that somebody else had shot, but it was gut shot, so it ran a long
way. Was it bigger than the one he shot?
Don't know that. Okay. I don't know.
What's the protocol on that, Matt? What do you?
Oh, he took that one out of the woods too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what condition it was in, how fresh it was, or anything like that. It was warm enough yet this weekend where,
yeah,
you know, if it was,
okay.
A lot of times, you know, if it's a few hours old, whatever, no big deal. It's cold enough, whatever. But when it's warm,
yeah, you're right. Opening weekend was warm, and then it's really gotten, like, right in the middle of deer season.
Quite frigid
on
now.
Wednesday, it got. Tuesday, yep. Wednesday, a lot colder. So, yeah.
So, Matt, as a hunter, if you are in the woods and you see a wounded deer, because I'm sure that happens, right? Even if you, like, this isn't the one I want to take, is it a good hunting practice to take that one out?
Yeah, I mean, if it looks like it's suffering and all that. And, like, for this area, like, where I hunt, you know, to Gamey County, I've got a buck tag and two doe tags. So, I mean...
You have a plenty.
Yeah. It's enough where, yeah. Can shoot one, and that's... So, I have that. My dad has that. My brother was here the last couple of days hunting, too. So, I mean, usually you're all right. You'll have enough tags to... I've never had a year where we've filled every tag we've had. So, and if we did that, we'd have to buy a new freezer.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's generally good to, especially like I said, if it looks suffering, just to put it out of its misery. And
because it's, if it makes it through this week, the chances of it making through the winter are probably low, right?
Right. It's just going to die somewhere if it's bad enough. I mean, I've seen three-legged deer that obviously it didn't happen this year. So, I mean, it all depends on what happens and how badly they're injured and stuff. But
I'm sure nature is impressive on what it can do to survive.
Well, right? With your wife being a vet, you know, how many three-legged dogs?
Oh, all the time. You know, yeah.
Animals adapt, and it's yeah. not...
Or just what animals can go through and be okay is pretty... The resiliency is amazing.
I have an uncle that had one farm dog that I think it got ran over, shot, and something else. And, like, I forget what finally killed it, but, I mean...
yeah, usually it's something very small.
Right, it was something really... I think maybe it got hit again. It got hit by the school bus, survived, and didn't survive getting hit by the milk truck or something like that. But that was a long time ago.
Cool.
You guys doing any Black Friday shopping this year?
Only in line if we're doing it.
Yeah. Not going to go wait outside.
No.
They've spread it out so much, too, that it's just...
Oh, yeah. Amazon was like all week.
Yeah.
And some stuff even started like last weekend.
I was wondering, too, because Thanksgiving is so late. Like, they kind of lost that week, right? Like, usually Black Friday should have been last Friday.
Right,
sure.
So now it's one less week Christmas. For, like, quote, but, shopping.
But this week Christmas. Would have been Cyber Monday then.
Right.
Which that's turned into, like, a week thing, too, almost.
That one was always weird to me. Like, on a Monday, you're going to just chuck, you know, like, they had... And then tomorrow is Small Business Saturday, so I don't know what that means, but it's... You should go to small businesses. And
everybody wants.
It's just like we're getting needs a day.
Seymour did their Shop the Block that was last weekend, which would have been normally, I guess, Small Business Saturday.
Bunch of people walking around for that.
Sounded like it was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's good.
I just drove down Main Street to go to the bank, and there was all kinds of cars. And
instantly got annoyed, started revving up and like going for pedestrians. Like, get out of my town!
Is it like a citywide rummage sale type?
Kind of, yeah. And each stop has a...
I think they had different things or whatever,
Like you could collect?
I don't know.
Yes, there's like a passport. No, I have no idea. My wife and mother-in-law went.
Sure.
I have no... The only knowledge I have is that they went. I don't really...
Do stores still open at like 5, 3, whatever in the morning, and people line up at like 2 in the morning for them, or is that kind of...
I think they open early, but they don't do like the super, like, I don't think it's the midnight thing or whatever anymore.
Because I know...
Because we reached that point of where people just got upset, because, like, I know the 1 year I had to work Black Friday in college, like, I literally had to go to work. Don't think we opened at midnight, but it basically had to be there like not too long after midnight.
Sure.
Just to
on
be
Thanksgiving
ready.
Night, you're saying.
Right.
Yeah.
So like you have Thanksgiving dinner, go to work, and then sit there and wait for the mass of psychos that are about to come in the door and just destroy the store
for their cabbage patch kid for the first hour and a half.
No, it was Menards, and that was
right. Like, yeah, I know you're Menards,
and that was you. I know I've talked about this before, but it just blew my mind how crazy people got just for Menards, which had nothing really that special.
I wonder if my wife was surprised to see she went to Kohl's on last week Sunday for some things, and they had self checkouts. We had never seen Kohl's those at Kohl's. So it's like, is that like staffing issues? Right, everybody's looking for help. So did Kohl's enact that because of that, and now are Black Friday's hours going to be different just because of
lack of help? Like, you just think about how much like Walmart and places have been having problems with people like stealing stuff through. So then you add that to like Black Friday.
Right.
Seems like a terrible combination.
Right. How you
maybe you'd have no cashiers and just everybody watching people check out. and making sure they're not stealing stuff. And
maybe
and,
they'll shut them down, but
well, yeah. And they're not fast. I'm a terrible like I'm oh, well, ter- I'm like I'm okay. I get certain, but each have their own quirks. Like you got to put it on the little scale thing, right. So it you know, and it's like they're not like. They're not set up to be fast. They're set up to be...
They can be fast. Yeah, it's correct. Just as long as but things don't go wrong. But
they're usually
wrong.
Not yeah. set up that way. And yeah, it's... For Black Friday, I
will guarantee
that
you, at some places, I am faster than the cashier. Even with the quirks
on
the of
cashier,
the machine.
Yes, yes.
I can get it checked out, bagged, and be out the door pretty fast.
Well, I'm like, all these, I only will go through the self. Because... If you go through the checkout,
those are set up. They have a belt
and you got to put your stuff in the belt, and then the guy puts it in the cart, and then you got to take it out of the cart and rebag it. It's like, well, why don't I just self checkout, take it in the cart, and put it in my bag?
Yeah.
So that's what's obnoxious, but whatever.
Looks like most stores are open Black Friday this morning at like 6 a.m. So
yeah,
Walmart 6 a.m., Target 6 a.m., Kohl's 5 a.m. So kind of that.
But I know like Kohl's, because you and I have a friend that works at Kohl's.
Does he still work there?
Yep. they run like holiday hours starting in right after Halloween, basically.
So and the Christmas music starts.
Yes, yeah. That can
officially start now. Having, after Thanksgiving,
yeah,
you can officially.
Having worked retail, I can tell you that if it's, especially like if they play the same stuff over and over again, you just become dead to it.
What's the loop? Like a 6 hour loop of
it might be
music.
He told me once it was, I want to say it was like 3 to 6 hours somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So you hear it like twice a shift a lot of times. And
not terrible. Unless you don't like Mariah Carey.
Yes, she's now been released from her cryogenic sleep or whatever. All those memes started after Halloween 2 of it's Mariah Carey time.
Nice.
Oh. But, yeah. All right. You guys ready to talk about what to be thankful for on the farm?
Yes.
So, Bill, this was your your episode. So, what do you got for us?
Well, as you're thinking about the holiday season here, and I thought, well, we always talk at Thanksgiving dinner what you're thankful for. I thought, well, what are farmers thankful for? So, I kind of put myself in a farmer's shoes and thought, these are the things, if I was a farmer, I sat down at Thanksgiving dinner, and these are the things that I would be thankful for if these metrics were on my farm. So there's no particular order here, no top 10, no, you know, most thankful, the least thankful, just things in general that I would be thankful for if I was a farmer. A lot of them are soil health. You know, everything starts with the soil, right? So pH, good soil fertility, good soil tilth, things like pH. Okay, so we got our soil tests. We just talked about that, right? We took a boatload of soil tests here this fall.
Yeah, Todd, you have a number on that?
A lot. And now we're going to sit down this fall, and we're going to talk about with all our farmers here this fall and winter about all these soil tests we've taken, where we are, where we need to fix things. So pH, if I've got 6.2 to 6.8, depending on my crop rotation, I'm thankful as a farmer that I don't need to worry about lime. And most of our soils in this area, we don't have to worry about, but we all have farms that are not in Outagamie County that need some help. I think the hardest part with pH is finding some. If you do need lime, like, where do you get it? There's not a lot of, like, you roll back the clock 20 years ago, 30 years ago, everybody, you could go.
Yeah, you can find lime.
Even the quarries were spreading it, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I would also argue that the opposite, when you have very high pH, like 7.5s to 8s, then you got to buy like a sulfur or a more acidic product, and that's even harder and more expensive to do. So
well, it's not hard to find, but it's hard.
It's just the expense part. Expensive. So I would agree with you that both of the lime or adjusting for pH is becoming more difficult. So, Yes, if most of your soils in your area lie within that optimum zone, you should be thankful for that.
Yep, be thankful for that. And that kind of goes with soil fertility, just P and K, having those levels in balance, working to get the manure further away so that we're not loading up the fields close to home.
You're not supposed to haul it all in one field?
No. I mean, you can, but there'll be consequences to that. So having good soil fertility on all your fields as best you can. I realize that that's expensive. Manure hauling is not cheap. I had to talk with the grower about 3 weeks ago, we have a field that's like 12 miles away, and yeah, I would like to get manure out there, but he kind of did the math and it was going to be like over $400 an acre to get manure there. And it's like, yeah, but at some point, you know, all that stuff that goes along with manure, the micronutrients, the organic matter, it's a lighter soil field. So those things would help. Good soil tilth. It's kind of why we picked our name.
That's a really good name. Yeah, word. What does that word mean?
I mean, it's why we picked it. Just good at water infiltration, good microorganism, you know, macro, micro bugs in the soil, earthworms, just all that stuff that, you know, goes around, you know, soil health and soil tilth. Kind of, Matt, you deal with that every day. So,
yeah.
In your demo farms, trying to improve all those things around tilth of the soil.
Yeah, just having all the components that make up a good, healthy, well-growing soil, things that are not going to be detriments to your crop. You know, having water infiltration means you've got pore space, you've got root channels, you got all these things, earthworm channels that allow the water to infiltrate, aerate itself. I mean, just think about how we used to cultivate everything to try to get air in the soil because it had sealed off so tight. And now, I mean, we don't do that very much. I mean, there's still a few guys that do, but
I do think being thankful for your soil in general is a good thing.
Yeah.
This time of year, sometimes you can be upset at maybe how a field yielded or what it did, but it is time to sort of be thankful for what for the harvest and kind of to the soil more than, you know, that stays every year and that's something we try to build and make better all the time. And being thankful for what you were given, even if it's not perfect. But I've even seen guys with really, really good soil and they don't even realize it and maybe how thankful they should be of what they were given or what they're, you know, a lot of them purchased it or maybe it was handed down from farm before them. But that part of this too is that farming's generational is really neat and important. So
next up, well-maintained equipment. We all want that tractor to start, that piece of equipment to work when it's go time, right? So taking the time this fall, winter, you know, we've talked about planter maintenance and all those things over the years, but having well-maintained equipment, I think, is really something to be thankful for. It comes at a cost, obviously, but there's also a cost to when that piece of equipment isn't running at its peak, you know, efficiency or at all, right, when it breaks. So having good maintained equipment, I think, is something to be thankful for.
Even the bare minimum of just checking levels and stuff before you operate equipment can save you money in the long run. If, you know, if you have a hydraulic leak you didn't notice right away or something like that, and you're checking levels before, you know, just having that maintenance idea in mind rather than getting in, getting frustrated, and being angry about it.
I'd like to spell how come you didn't use new equipment. Because I do think that, and it depends on the person, sometimes you like that feeling that a shiny new tractor gives you, but that quickly wears off.
Right.
And I think that having, I liked the word, you know, well-maintained, just a good fleet of equipment that you like. That there is something to that. No matter if it's, you know, a bunch of older stuff that you've maintained well or maybe some newer things, you still need to maintain them. They're still going to break down.
It's that ounce of prevention is a pound of cure, right?
Yep.
So, but not everybody can afford that new shiny thing every year, right? So you got to get through what you can with what you have, and you got to make sure it's running. So just keep it up to snuff on maintenance. And I know it takes time too, right? So hopefully you have someone on the farm that kind of manages that end of it.
I've seen people driving tractor, farmers driving tractor that are just as happy in an old like 1086 as a brand new John Deere, you know, R series. So I do think there is something to that, too, of just of in, you know, people are very to their brand, to their color of equipment, but making sure you have stuff that you enjoy being in and are thankful for that fleet of equipment, or maybe it's not all of them. I'm sure there's a few tractors or pieces of equipment that piss you off and are always broke, but knowing the ones that have, every farmer's got those that are just always that old, reliable kind of favorite piece of equipment.
And hopefully this time of year, if you have to be out in the field, you're not driving something open station.
Yes.
All right. Next two kind of somewhat go hand in hand, sort of. Having all your manure hauled, it is after Thanksgiving, so important that we got a lot of our manure out. We're going to, you know, we are pretty much frozen now. Maybe there's some spots you can still get injection, but having all your manure hauled has got to be a really good thing, really good feeling for a farmer that, okay, my pits are empty. We're going to make it through the winter. You should really be thankful for that. Look at all the hard work you did all season to get it hauled out. So I think that's an important one. And then kind of also having extra storage, but having extra feed on the pile that, okay, if we have a drought, I mean, if we have a, like this year where it was really wet, we couldn't get in and maybe yields aren't going to be what we expected, but having extra feed on the pile is also something to be thankful for. So getting the manure out and more feed in.
What goes in has to come out. So right.
And I realize,
they go hand in hand.
I realize that all farmers can't afford or have the acreage to build up that much of storage, extra feed stored. But if you have that ability, we never know, right? As farmers, we're always worried about what's going to happen in the future. Probably where the make hay when the sun is shining kind of came from, right? We got to get it while we can because we don't know when it's going to rain again. So those are a couple of things that I think as if I was a farmer, I'd be very thankful that I didn't have to worry about my manure pit. And I knew that when I went to the feeder bunk, that there'd be feed there to feed my cows. We talked earlier about employees with Walmart and all that. I think having hard working employees and loyal employees this day and age, it's got to be really important and really be thankful for it. I don't know how you can stress that much because you can't farm by yourself anymore. You got to have people around you that you can trust and you can delegate things to and you know that it's going to get done.
This is a good time of year to think about them and be thankful for them. And then as you move into the, you know, the Christmas time, and that is maybe obviously figuring out ways to actually do something for them to show your thanks. I mean, that can be hard sometimes because how do you really truly thank somebody that's given up their time and things to be on your farm and help you out? But as much as you can do to literally say thanks and say it and do things of thanks at this time of year is good. And yeah, build that sort of community with your employees where they feel like they're part of the team, and that's always a good thing.
Well, and sometimes your next one goes with it because sometimes your employees are family members too. So remembering as we are gathering with family for the holidays that you still have to see those people outside of the barn, and it's good to keep those relationships in good shape.
And we all know that the way we treat family in a stressful situation might be different than we treat just an employee, right? Like
right.
We may be a little more harsh to them or a little less understanding because they're your kid or because they're
your brother,
your old man or whatever it is, right? Your
brother, cousin,
like, yep, like
yep, whoever.
So again, I think you're right, Matt. Like, yeah, Thanksgiving dinner could be awkward. I totally random, but I heard Baker Mayfield is suing his father and his brother for taking money from him. I don't know, like, the whole story, but then it went on to say, like, ooh, Thanksgiving dinner is going to be awkward.
It'd be like almost like the Rogers household.
Right. So you do have to, if you are working with family members, you are going to see them again, right, at Thanksgiving dinner. Like you said, Matt, the next one, understanding. I put understanding family members, like they're okay with what you're doing. You're putting in long hours at all summer long, right, between planting and harvest, you're in the tractor, you're in the barn, whatever it is. So having family members that understand and are okay with what you're doing and being away from them, I think is also another thing to be thankful for, because not everybody has an understanding spouse that's like, why are you always gone? Or why are you doing this? Or you could be doing a different job that you're home and you're not. So I think having family members, especially a spouse, I think that is something to be thankful for.
Yeah.
Safety, being safe and healthy, right? That's very important, because we all know that when you're not feeling well or when you're sick, that sucks. And so if you're say you had a good, safe year, no accidents, no issues, and you have good health, that's something also to be thankful for. And I think everybody does. We sit down to Thanksgiving dinner and we're all thankful for our health, right? Because once it's gone, it's sometimes you don't know how healthy you are until you're not.
Yep.
Also, a couple last things here. We can be thankful the amount of change and impact that a farmer does. On average, one U.S. farmer feeds about 168 people. So I think that's probably gone up, right, as the years have gone on. We all have seen those charts of, you know, what a tractor in the 1940s, how many acres per hour it could do and how many people it could feed. And now as time has gone on, you know, that's just substantially increased about what a farmer's efficiency is. So
yeah,
could be thankful for the impact we make on the general public, and they don't even know it. Last one, selfishly here, just having good team players, a good veterinarian, a good nutritionist, salespeople you deal with, whether that's your seed person that you trust or a feed salesman that you trust, and, of course, your agronomist. Being thankful that you have a good agronomist.
Who you may treat like an employee, which could be good or bad, but any of those positions. But, yeah, just having a good team around you and people that you can rely on is important, and knowing that they're working for your best interest as well as their own. So
I do know as an agronomist, I am thankful for my farmers, so that can be reciprocal.
Absolutely. All right. Well, there you go. There's some things to think about as we continue through the holiday season. We may be leaving Thanksgiving behind, but then we have Christmas and everything else coming up too, and it's always important to be thankful for those around us these times of year. So now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So as we enter 2025, we'll be seeing a changeover in government on a number of levels. So we thought a good way to start would be getting to know Brooke Rollins, the nominee for Secretary. So she is the surprise nominee for Department of Agriculture to lead the Department of Agriculture. Rollins is the president and CEO of the conservative nonprofit America First Policy Institute, which was launched in 2021. The background for Ms. Rollins is she is 52 years old from Glen Rose, Texas, where she grew up on a family farm and participated in FFA, where she served as state officer and was in 4-H. Rollins stayed involved with both those organizations, has been hands-on in the show cattle careers of her four children. Rollins' family lives in Fort Worth, Texas. In a post last Sunday, she was thanking people for well-wishing and the nomination announcement, and she highlighted her ag teacher at Glen Rose High School, Gary Rosenbusch, saying he helped change her life. She attended Texas A&M, where she became the first woman to be named student body president, and graduated with an undergraduate degree in agricultural development in 1994. She then earned her law degree from the University of Texas. Post-law school, Rollins worked at Hughes and Luce LLP, a law firm in Dallas that has since merged with K&L Gates. She also served as the president and CEO of the Texas Public Policy Foundation for 15 years and worked as a former Texas Governor Rick Perry's policy director. 2018, she was named Assistant to the President for Intergovernmental and Technology Initiatives and Director of the Office of American Innovation. She held these positions until May 2020, when Trump appointed her Director of Domestic Policy Council until the end of his first administration. So after leaving office, she co-founded the AFPI alongside former Trump advisor Larry Kudlow. Rollins has served as the AFPI's president and CEO since its inception, and she's joined the TPPF board of directors in April 2021. So she does have farm background, which is more than it sounds like when you hear he hired a lawyer to be the...
Right. That's what I thought first. Like, oh, we got a lawyer here. How is that going to go? But
yeah, especially because there were actual farmers and other people that seemed to be in the running. You never know with those things. People will throw names around. And
it feels like everybody just chucks whatever name right. they think, and they're not, like you say, to say this is a surprise pick, it's because nobody said the name before this. It right. just doesn't...
She wasn't on anybody else's list. But
I think they kind of... Like, she was in the list for chief of staff, so I think that might be where the surprise comes in, is that she was potentially... on the fast track for chief of staff and didn't get that. So maybe that's where the surprise is, but
sure.
Anyhow.
All right. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So as it is Thanksgiving week, I thought we'd talk about the first Thanksgiving dinner and what it probably actually looked like. So most Americans don't realize what we have, that we have a very limited understanding of the first Thanksgiving, which took place in 1621 in Massachusetts. Indeed, few of the present-day traditions resemble what happened 400 years ago, and there's only one original account of the feast. So the main course that scholars can speak about with some certainty was waterfowl and venison, so not a lot of turkey or any of that kind of stuff. It was goose and duck. And they also have accounts of 5 deer being gifted to the government. Therefore, venison likely had a place alongside the goose and duck at the Thanksgiving dinner. Though wild cranberries could have been found at the time, the location of the first Thanksgiving, it wasn't actually near any of those cranberry bogs, and there's no mention of it in any historic records. So most likely they had sabahag stew, which was often a mixture of beans, corn, poultry, squash, nuts, and clam juice.
Clam juice.
Gross.
Yeah, so it's quite the casserole right there. As far as side dishes, cornbread was more likely than potatoes, as corn would have been the starch at the time. Instead of your traditional Thanksgiving turkey or brown gravy for your potatoes, you probably would have had green sauce, which was
on your cornbread.
Yeah, likely
you
made
didn't have potatoes
from things like beans, squash, onions, turnips, and greens like spinach or chard. And for dessert, well, sugar wasn't really a big thing, so maple syrup would have been most likely the sweet that they would have had at the time. So either direct, or maybe they would have put it on their cornbread too. You never know.
No pumpkin pie.
If they're anything like my grandfather was, he put it on everything. So he put it on rice,
maple syrup on rice.
Yep.
Wow.
Eggs. Have you tried that?
I have not.
I just don't even know.
It's just blew Todd's mind.
Right, well, there. I don't.
He put it on a lot of different stuff. But they made maple syrup and had it in large quantities. So I imagine the being the Depression era mindset of, like, you got to use what you have, that probably, who knows? I never did get a chance to ask him if he really liked it or not. He maybe just hated rice that much and liked the taste of maple syrup, or had so much maple syrup, but yeah. Regardless, the first Thanksgiving, probably not anything like what we were going to, or what we saw in our homes this year. So
good. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. Please subscribe to the podcast and tell a farmer friend. It's very easy. Just search Tilt Talk Radio and Apple Podcasts on your iPhone or on your Android phone. Download an app like Podcast Addict, and there you can also search Tilt Talk Radio. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthegg.com/podcast. And you can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilt Talk Radio.
Thanks, Todd. Now it's time for our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So, Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. And our Cool Beans this week is from Cool Bean, Dr. Sean Connolly from the University of Wisconsin. So,
our favorite Cool Bean.
He says, consider planting earlier when it comes to your soybeans. Research across the Midwest has shown that early planted soybean have a greater yield potential compared to those planted later. U.S. Department of Agriculture's Risk Management Agency in 2023 worked with Science for Success, soybean specialists across the country, and shifted the earliest soybean planting date in states where the data was available. In Wisconsin, the date was shifted from April 26th to April 15th in central and southern regions and to April 20th in the northern part of the state. Consequently, with 7 to 11 additional days covered by Risk Management Agency, some may be suitable for planting if weather permits this next spring. So the change could allow for more planting of soybean acres earlier in the season, thus taking advantage of the yield-increasing effect of that early planting. It's here in Wisconsin that we were curious what the potential shift could provide to farmers using USDA National Agriculture Statistics Service data from 2023 on acres planted and total production. Estimated the additional soybean bushels that could be produced by utilizing extra days suitable for field work or days covered by the new dates. Across the state, there were, on average, 2 additional working days in 2023, ranging from 0 to 4, depending on region. And during those days, we conservatively estimate more than 110,000 acres could have been planted statewide. Assuming a 3% yield increase due to earlier planting would have resulted in more than 430,000 additional bushels produced in 2023 had we planted earlier. So
that even works in Gillette, Wisconsin. I have proof this year that early planting pays off.
So there you go. Cool beans. Literally cool beans, because in April it's not very warm.
Literally they're going to be cold, yeah.
Put your beans in a soil blanket. They're cold. All right. That's corny this week, but it's cool beans for the turkeys themselves. President Biden has, as is tradition, pardoned turkeys again this year, but, well, PETA, not a big fan of the whole process. Imagine that.
Shocking.
Every November, 2 turkeys take center stage at the White House for the National Thanksgiving Turkey Presentation, a quirky tradition blending humor, history, and political theater. This year, Peach and Blossom, which were raised by National Turkey Federation Chairman John Zimmerman in Minnesota, were officially pardoned by President Joe Biden. The turkeys will retire at Farm America in Waseca, Minnesota, where they'll live out their days as agricultural ambassadors. Raised on the Zimmerman family farm, which has produced 4 to 5 million turkeys over the last 2 decades, Peach and Blossom represent a legacy of agriculture. Alongside raising the turkeys, the family also grows corn and soybeans to support their flocks. This year, Zimmerman was joined by his young son, Grant, who played a key role in preparing the turkeys for their Washington debut. Their journey to the nation's capital included a stay at the historic Willard Intercontinental Hotel, where the pair enjoyed top-notch accommodations. So the turkeys got a fancy hotel room. But not everyone found the spectacle worth celebrating. The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals turned heads with a protest featuring a Hell on Wheels turkey truck parked near the White House. The truck, complete with images of sickly turkeys crammed into crates, blasted turkey cries and subliminal messages urging people to go vegan. They've got a nice picture of a guy in a turkey suit with a placard that says, "Pardon me, go vegan." Life-size turkey transportation truck covered with images of real sickly turkeys was presented there. If people listen very closely, they'll hear a subliminal message to go vegan every 10 seconds, according to Amanda Brody, the PETA's assistant manager for international grassroots campaigns. It's because we want people to listen closely and watch closely, because every turkey is an individual. Well, yes. and they also taste very good.
As the pardoned turkey, the picture of the pardoned turkey, that looks like a healthy,
that turkey's
very
a beast.
Robust
yeah.
turkey.
Yeah.
Yep. It's interesting. Interesting tactics that PETA always has to try to present their case, but yeah,
to each their own, I guess.
Yep, you want to eat vegan, that's fine. I'm going to eat turkey. All right, now we'll wrap things up with our Field Good Friday. This week, as we look to the next holiday in line, Christmas, the White House's Christmas tree this year, it will be a symbol of resilience for hurricane-hit North Carolina farms. So the Kartner family had known since last year that one of their farm's Christmas trees would be headed to the White House this winter. But then Hurricane Helene struck, unleashing a deadly deluge across western North Carolina, including Avery County, where Kartner's Christmas tree farm has stood for decades. Though the farm lost thousands of trees to a mudslide, many more survived, including a 20-foot conical tree that dwarfs most of the others on the sprawling farm. This one will soon be cut down, lifted by crane, and put on a truck bound for the nation's capital. We want it to be really an uplifting symbol for the farmers and other people in western North Carolina that have experienced so many losses, according to Sam Kartner Jr., one of the three brothers who owns the farm. From the back of the property where the White House tree is located, it's hard to see the extent of Helene's damage, but countless rows of dark green trees stand in formation, contrasting the lighter mossy green shade of the rolling hills. It's mostly quiet, but as you go to the front of the property, the damage becomes more apparent. A section of the grassy hill looks like it was clawed out to expose the brown earth beneath it. The aftermath of a mudslide that took out between 5,000 to 6,000 trees. So luckily, those trees were smaller and not market size, meaning it wasn't an immediate problem for this harvest season, but obviously for the future. So hopefully they can replant, and I'm sure they'll have a couple lean years in there, but maybe they can make it through.
Tree farming is crazy to me because as much as they do cost when you buy one, I mean, if you had to get it spaded out and buy a new tree to put in your yard, it's way more money and
right.
just, it's oh, different. Yeah. So there's margin there, but it's somewhat tighter. And you do got to prune. Like one summer in high school, the 4-H did an exchange trip, and we got exchanged with North Carolina, and we got to go to like a tree farm down there. They actually never came up here. I don't know if they didn't like us, but we went down there.
Apparently,
there's
no such a bad taste in the mouth of
it was
North
a
Carolina.
Tough area in North Carolina that most people, I don't think, had enough. Some of them, unfortunately, their families didn't have enough money to come up here. But we get to spend time on a tree farm and see all the maintenance that goes on and the size of them out there. In this article, it said 20% of the U.S.'s Christmas trees come from North Carolina, so
wow.
it's pretty cool what they've got for an industry out there, and how well it does even to protect the soil in some of those sloping areas. It does a really good job, so it's a really neat industry.
All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked about things to be thankful for as we wrap up the 2024 season and look to 2025. In our spotlight, we took a look at Brooke Rollins, the nominee for Secretary of Agriculture. Egg History Minute, we talked about the first Thanksgiving dinner and what it probably actually looked like. Cool Beans this week was consider planting your soybeans earlier. That's Corny was PETA ruffled by the pardoning of turkeys at the White House. And our Feel Good Friday was the White House Christmas tree will represent a symbol of resilience for hurricane-hit North Carolina farms. Thanks for listening, and as always, happy farming.